Blog Talk Radio.
WPR Rebuttal is on the air.
Welcome to WPR Rebuttal, covering the size of the story missed by Wisconsin Public Radio, bringing you narratives the UW System Board of Regents won't allow, and shedding light and perspectives the owners of WPR don't want you to hear. I'm your host, Senator JPO, bringing you the long-awaited episode on federal income taxation. And what inspired this particular podcast episode was a Reuters episode's poll from Tuesday, October 4th, that claimed that popular opinion held, lawful avoidance of taxation, not doing a Wesley Snipes unlawful, illegal avoidance by simply not paying what's due, but a legally defensible avoidance of tax liability. And that Reuters Ipsos poll found that about more than half of the respondents believed that it was actually smart, intelligent-wise, whatever you want to call it, prudent to avoid paying more taxes than one was lawfully liable. But that same poll, about two-thirds of respondents said it was selfish to do so if the person avoiding the tax was a presidential candidate. And unfortunately, there's no comparison question in that poll as to whether it'd be selfish for the respondent as not the presidential candidate to avoid paying it. I believe that if the Reuters Ipsos poll had provided a comparison question, it is selfish for someone who's not running for president to avoid paying taxes, then I'm sure that selfish percentage would be substantially lower. Not sure exactly how much it would be, but probably closer to the proportion that said it would be smart to avoid paying taxes. And then about 61% of that poll believed it was unpatriotic for a presidential candidate to avoid paying taxes. And again, there have been a comparison question: is it unpatriotic for an average citizen who's not running for president to avoid paying taxes? Well, I'm certain that percentage would be lower as well. But the bottom line is that Reuters Ipsos polls are only as valid as their polling methodology, and they took one snapshot, and really Reuters Ipsos is owned by Thomson Reuters. And Thomson Reuters gave up to $10 million to the Clinton Foundation within the past 5 years. So right away, it's an evident connection of interest to slamming down Donald Trump and attempting to elevate that Hillary Clinton, to whose foundation Thomson Reuters had donated as a matter of record, up to $10 million, at least $5 million. Because, unfortunately, Clinton Foundation does not report particular amounts. They only report brackets. But Thomson Reuters is in that $5 to $10 million donor bracket. Now, as to the actual effects of the evasion of federal income tax, first off, the federal deficit is many times greater than what would happen if people were to go and not claim their credits, not even claim their standard deduction. Our deficit would still exceed $1 trillion, even if we had all the taxpayer units, as they're called by the Tax Policy Foundation, even if the taxpayers and businesses and individuals alike were to go and pay more tax than they were liable for. Well, it just would be impossible, except for the biggest of businesses. It'd be impossible if each individual payer of income tax, if they were to go and pay double, they would still not pay down the federal deficit. So, I mean, you could go and apply that for like over a decade. You'd have to have like more than a decade of every taxpayer paying more than double their tax liability in order to pay down this it's like $3.5 trillion deficit, because you're just not going to have that sustainability of gross national product. If you divert investment from job creation over into just paying all these debt tours who don't create jobs. Okay, these holders of the federal national deficit, well, they're not creating jobs in exchange for that deficit. It's just, not nearly to the same extent as like the private sector is creating jobs. Like Wisconsin's Open for Business Initiative is targeting private sector job development, and these jobs are lower middle tier jobs, but they are paying double digit wages in a lot of cases. Like, go to a staffing agency, and most jobs they have available pay at least $10 hourly. And that's great, because especially if you're an underemployed college graduate, like yours truly has been for the past 6, going on 7 years, you need these fallback jobs that pay the double-digit wages. And I started at my staffing agency job 2 years ago at only 10 hourly, and through my attendance and error-free performance, I negotiated on my own a $3 raise. And at first, that was a $1 raise after a first year, but then the client company gave me another $2 raise without me asking, only about 4 to 5 months after my initial raise. So I got a $3 raise within 18 months, and that is literally a 30% raise, which is unheard of no matter your occupation. No matter your occupation, a 30% raise, it's almost magical. It's unheard of, and yet I negotiated it. And, of course, I was the one to initiate it, and originally asked the agency, but they sent it back to me by just saying, hey, just negotiate and we'll back you up if they refuse. So that was great, and I was able to negotiate it and come out strong ahead of the pack, so to speak. So now, how does that affect my tax liability? Not at all. You know why? Because as I went up to the next income bracket, the standard deduction increased with me. So does it make me unpatriotic to avoid paying taxes? No, because standard deduction means a lot of people don't pay any federal income tax even before you calculate what credits you might be eligible for. And even better, the earned income credit. The earned income tax credit, I mean, you might hear two different acronyms here. EIC is earned income credit. EITC, earned income tax credit. They are the same thing. And the bottom line is that your earned income credit also grows with not only like your standard deduction and earned income credit grow with your income to a certain limit, of course. With the earned income credit, it kind of tapers off when you get to about $40,000+. But it also can expand, though, with the number of dependents that you support. More or less, I mean, the marginal effect of the earned income credit is much reduced once you get five or more dependents. But I have zero dependents, thankfully. And I get at least, oh my goodness, last year I got a $700-some refundable credit, because the earned income credit is refundable. So earned income credit is like a godsend to lower income taxpayers. And that's the way Congress intended it. They not only offered the earned income credit, but they also tiered it out by income brackets so that even those without children would be eligible for a refundable tax credit. So, I mean, that's how I directly benefit from earned income credit. And according to the Tax Policy Foundation, the TPF, which is a joint venture actually between the Urban Institute and I want to say the Cato Institute, but essentially you can Google Tax Policy Foundation and find their website and find out who's running it and all that. But because I have a lot of notes here, and it's tough to keep the notes straight, but I do my best. And the bottom line is that I do remember Tax Policy Foundation said that, and this depends on a given year too. So over the years, the Tax Policy Foundation has said that between 43% and 47% of all Americans do not pay federal income tax. And I just explained that's mostly because of standard deduction and various credits, the most commonly applied being the earned income tax credit. Is that unpatriotic? Is that selfish to use it? No. And you know why it's not? Because that is the way Congress intended it for the average citizen. And you know what? Donald Trump being exempt from however many years of federal income tax, at least in theory. There's no evidence that he's actually, there's no documentation that he has avoided paying federal income tax. It's just an inference or an assumption made by the media pundits. Well, even if he did not, okay, it's necessary to reward risk-taking, okay? Because if the business losses that Trump has claimed were not tax-deductible, what motive would he have to go and take on marginally risky ventures, right? And this way, the federal government is subsidizing risk-taking, much like it bailed out the banks, but this is not a bank bailout that Trump got, okay? The bank bailout was a bunch of people who were using consumer deposits, right, that should be lockboxed and safeguarded away. They're using these consumer deposits to go and gamble as investment bankers. Now, that was wrong because deposits are not meant to be gambled with. Now, that is worlds away from what Donald Trump did. He used investor money, not bank deposits from residential consumer bankers, but he used actual investment money, business loans, and his own private savings, stuff that is intended to be gambled or used in a fairly risky way. And he used that on various hotels, and of course, some of his hotels opened a bit late. Some of his hotels closed down after a number of years, and other of his hotels are still operating by our different owners via acquisition from liens and other types of debt obligations. But the bottom line is, okay, the tax liability that he lost through losing so much money on his private ventures, that is also part of congressional intent. It doesn't make him unpatriotic. It doesn't make him selfish. And you know what? That debt, that deficit spending on the private ventures created and sustained jobs for a certain amount of time before the operations closed. And some situations, many of the people who had worked in those net loss operations, okay, they were able to use that temporary work experience to get even better jobs, just like I'm using my temporary work experience now to transition either into a full-time position of my employer, who does not seem to be losing money. My employer seems to be making money because they keep on expanding the hours of my temporary operation, so that's good. But the bottom line is that it's better to deficit spend for job creation than it is to go and just make everyone pay more taxes that don't go towards the same extent of job creation. We want people to be able to lawfully earn income, and that's what legitimate job creation does. If you go and crack down, okay, on the tax liability and you make it more difficult to lawfully avoid paying taxes, that takes money out of the private sector, and that makes it more difficult to create legitimate jobs, and then you have these suburbs turn into like ghettos where they have to like do illegitimate activities and as like their second job in order to get by. Whereas under legitimate business creation, which the federal government, okay, subsidizes business creation, not only through Small Business Administration and not only through agribusiness subsidies, but also through the forgiveness of debt by making that debt tax exempt, okay, by making certain business losses exempt from federal income tax. And that's the whole premise of the tax law, is to go and make it so that the people who are lower on income, whether through their inability to earn through a job by working through someone else, like yours truly, I am not going to be earning a six-figure salary anytime soon. No, I mean, I have a few college degrees, but, you know, hiring managers are just an awful bunch, and it's just certain things where I am probably not going to earn more than what I'm earning now for a while, unless I successfully negotiate another raise for my current position. But the bottom line is that there are too many structural obstacles, and most of those originate from human resources practice, And that's another issue for another time about why human resources people are so discriminatory against law-abiding people who have proven that they are critical thinkers and they're punctual workers and all that. Why can't they get hired for better positions? Why can't they be hired permanently? Why are they stuck in permanent temp roles? Why? Well, that's a whole another chestnut to crack on another episode of this podcast. But the whole point that I'm making is that whether your earnings are depressed because of hiring managers' assumptions about you, or whether your earnings are depressed because your business model isn't the greatest and you lose money, the whole purpose of federal taxation policy and these so-called tax loopholes, which are mostly deductions and credits, the whole purpose of that, the congressional intent, is to avoid having the less fortunate people in our economy get double whammied by a huge tax liability. Now, if that isn't clear to you people, okay, all you people who are calling Trump unpatriotic or selfish for having this low liability, it's not really, okay, it's small. It's congressional intent that the IRS has allowed for him to write off all that tax liability stemming from flaws in the business model. You think that he wanted to have a flawed business model? No, he wanted to earn millions, okay? He did not want to end up losing millions, but the federal government rewards risk-taking by making the federal income tax liability go down as you lose more money. And it's just like, well, why would a poor person want to be poor and not earn more than like $13 an hour, right? Well, it's not because they want to stay at 13 hourly. I mean, a lot of them have college degrees and they want to earn jobs that pay at least 18 hourly and have them in a clerical position or at least some type of office. But no, I mean, just because the way society works, a lot of them get stuck in manual labor jobs, and they're fortunate that they can even get jobs that pay 10 to 13 hourly. And they would want to go and earn more, but no, they can't. And that's why federal taxation policy forgives a lot of the liability that they would otherwise have. They forgive the liability via standard deduction, which everyone from me to you to Donald Trump takes a standard deduction, and the tax credits. And there are different tax credits, but most people of my income bracket, they take the earned income tax credit. People in Trump's income bracket, depending on whether he posts a net gain or net loss. I mean, if he's posting a net loss and he doesn't take any income from being a CEO or anything, or if his stipend as being a member of the board of directors is sufficiently low, he can take the earned income tax credit too. It's our American right to do that. As taxpayers, we have the right to go and opt for those credits that reduce our net tax liability. It's to congressional intent. So all you people who are saying, well, you should go and pay a lot of taxes if you have enough money to invest. No, consider it this way, okay? The money that Trump saved that he didn't pay the federal income tax, he was able to pay some of that as wages to the workers. What percentage? Well, that's not going to be divulged through a tax statement, okay? Donald Trump's tax filings do not disclose, okay, no one's tax filings disclose what percentage of his income was paid to workers as wages. You know why it's not disclosed? Because no company discloses that, no organization discloses that unless, A, they're publicly traded, in which case the Securities Exchange Commission filings, the SEC filings, not the IRS filings. So all the people are like, oh, we'll go and tell us how much he pays the employees. They're going after the wrong agency. They shouldn't be bothering the IRS for those filings. They should be requesting the Securities Exchange Commission. Okay, so what if the organization is privately held, right? A lot of Trump organizations and holdings are privately held. A lot of the ventures are family ventures, or they're just partnerships. And the bottom line is they're not Class C corporations. I mean, even if they're LLCs, they're not necessarily publicly traded. They're not registered with the Securities Exchange Commission because they've not had an initial public offering or an IPO. They're not publicly listed. They don't have a ticker symbol, rather. And in those cases, like Epic Systems in Verona, or it's just Epic, but I mean, Epic by itself as a name doesn't really mean anything unless you're working in an electronic medical records industry or EMR. So I call them Epic Systems, but they're essentially, they used to be based in Milton, then moved to Verona, and it's just they're kind of an odd company because they do not really communicate much about themselves, and you almost have to be, it's tough to get hired there because they don't want experienced people. They just want young people out of college who have no real coding or software experience because they want to make them into Epic style people as opposed to taking more experienced people who might have a backbone and stand up for themselves. And they don't want people with good self-esteem. They just want kind of catty people who are just inexperienced, and they'll do whatever Epic tells them, and they won't second-guess Epic's usage of the outdated mumps coding or anything like that because, I could do a whole podcast on Epic and why they're bad and why they deserve to lose that big Navy contract they lost. Yeah, they lost about a third of their business recently within the past 2 years. But at any rate, that's just a good example. Like, if Donald Trump were running Epic, I'm sure he'd do things better than what Judy Faulkner and her lackeys are doing. But the bottom line is that, why don't you go and ask Epic in Verona, Wisconsin, you know, what percentage of its income or revenue that it pays to its workers, right? That's the same type of thing. I mean, if Faulkner were running for president, I'm sure people would be harassing her, too, about these issues. But the bottom line is that it is entirely normal for privately held organizations to not disclose what percentage of their profits or the revenue before profits goes to worker wages, goes to a compensation as a segment of their budget. And then another thing is like UW system, University of Wisconsin does disclose how much it pays to, in terms of like wages by department, but that's only because it's a quasi-autonomous non-government organization, or QANGO. Okay, it's quasi-autonomous because it's given funding by a government, so it's dependent on the government for funding. You take away that general purpose revenue, UW system will collapse. There's no way it can function as a private university because it's just not prestigious enough. It doesn't produce enough gainfully employed college graduates to be sustained by alumni donations. UW system sucks, okay? That's why it cannot exist independent of the general purpose revenue. But at any rate, I have since put to rest all the misconceptions about federal income tax liability. I have explained why it is wise and why it's just merely following congressional intent and using all the resources. It's being resourceful, okay? Using the resources at one's disposal, being at one's disposal via the IRS Internal Revenue Code, okay? That is just being smart about not paying any more taxes than one needs. And Donald Trump used an accountant, but I don't. I just have a simple tax liability that I work through, and standard deduction gets rid of most of it, and a refundable earned income tax credit obliterates all my federal income tax liability. And because it's a refundable credit, I usually get between $500 and $800. Depending on the year, in refundable tax credit. And at the state level in Wisconsin, I haven't paid any taxes on that since attaining independent filer status, so that's good. And, again, that whole job where I negotiated a 30% raise, that allowed me to attain independent filer status. And, when you hear of low-income people who are paying taxes, that's because most of them are someone else's dependents, okay? Their earnings are so low because they're not even working a regular job, okay? They're just doing, like, hobby income on the side. And those are people who are low income and paying the taxes, okay? Paying the income taxes. Now, everyone pays payroll tax if they're actually doing a regular job and they're on someone's payroll. Everyone pays payroll taxes. But the big media brouhaha is not about the payroll taxation liability. It's about the income taxation liability. So the whole point is that, nearly half of Americans do not pay any income taxation liability at the federal level. They don't pay any income tax at the federal level because that's the way Congress intended it, where a lot of people will end up in a position where just through happenstance, just by trying to make the best commercial and economic decisions possible, they just end up not paying it because, A, they don't earn enough, or B, they might earn enough, but then their expenditures for their organization negate their earnings, and it results in a loss, and the federal government essentially underwrites that business loss by giving them an exemption from federal income tax. And that's really all that boils down to. It's not due to any offshoring or anything like that. It's just due to, Trump having a lot of American businesses that hired American employees. And, it's pretty clear they didn't skimp on the wages. Otherwise, he would have been able to make a profit. So, he treated the people, the workers, fairly. And I've yet to see any reports about workers claiming that he shortchanged them or anything like that. In terms of a contractor, he did not pay a contractor if the job was not made to specification, but that's his right. That's why we have spec sheets. That's why contracts have riders and all that other stuff. In terms of people directly employed, they were paid according to their employment contract. And again, you show up and you do at least the minimum job, if not better, and you get your wage. I've yet to hear of anyone saying that Trump withheld wages. If you compare Donald Trump's hotels to the TNA Impact wrestling organization, TNA Impact has withheld wages to not only their on-camera talent, but also to the people operating the cameras, to the event staff, to the audio-video technicians, and all that. So Donald Trump is doing a better job of running a fairer job, too. TNA Impact and some of Trump's hotels have lost money, but Trump is doing a better job of administration, of actually ensuring that the obligations are paid. And because he is paying these obligations in terms of compensation, in terms of honoring contracts that have not been nullified, that's because he's just being fair, okay? He's paying his obligations, and that's why he posted a loss. If he weren't paying his obligations, then he would not post a loss. You see how that works? And because the federal government wants debtors to go and pay those in the private sector, okay, to whom they own debt, they don't want people to go and say, I can't pay you because I need to pay Uncle Sam first. The people in Congress, okay, the members of Congress who passed the IRS Internal Revenue Code, they would rather have the private sector debtors pay each other and just have that out of the way before a person goes and calculates tax liability. And that's why the Internal Revenue Code forgives a great deal of business debt. And if you want more information, you can go to the irs.gov website and search for the tax publications on that. But the general theory and how it usually plays out in terms of a business owner, whether it's Donald Trump or a small business that is on its last legs and it's going to close, and the federal government doesn't want the owner of a now closed business to be put into further bankruptcy by a federal income tax liability, well, there you are. And I don't own a business, but I do work for someone, and they do the federal income tax for me. I do earn enough where I would have tax liability if not for earned income credit. But because the earned income credit, as Congress intended it, I do not pay any liability. I don't have any actual federal income tax liability. In a lot of cases at the state, I don't have any liability either because, that's just the general philosophy behind the tax code. okay? They do not want to gouge those who have suffered, whether through low starting income, like a low-income worker, or whether through low-ending income, such as a business owner who experienced catastrophe. Okay, well, this is Senator JPO signing off. Our next podcast will be Friday, October 21st at about 1:30 p.m. Senator JPO signing off for WPR Rebuttal.